And Russia says the West blames Daesh for the Moscow concert hall attack to deflect blame from Ukraine and the Western governments that support Kyiv. Hello everyone, a very warm welcome to World News. Now nearly 6 months into the Israeli genocide in Gaza, and the regime continues with its bombing and shelling campaign against residential buildings and hospitals. Israel's carried out 8 massacres in the last 24 hours, resulting in the deaths of over 76 Palestinians and 102 injuries. The regime attacked a greenhouse near Shabura refugee camp, killing 4 people, including a woman. 7 Palestinians were also killed in an airstrike that destroyed a residential building in western Gaza, and dozens were also injured in attacks on Al-Zaytun neighborhood in Gaza City. The health system in Gaza is also further deteriorating due to Israeli attacks on hospitals. An attack on a building full of people next to Al-Shifa Hospital has led to deaths and 6 children trapped under rubble. According to UNICEF, now more than 13,000 children have been killed. Regime's onslaught on Gaza has claimed over 32,500 lives and injured nearly 75,000 others since October the 7th. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman has called for global action to stop Israeli genocide and war crimes against Palestinians. Nasser Kanani said the international organizations must move beyond mere issuing statements or passing resolutions and take practical steps to halt Israel's savage crimes and the destruction of Gaza. Kanani added that Israel's war on the health sector is a painful part of the regime's campaign, citing continued attacks on the territory's major health centers. He said Israeli strikes have knocked out 33 hospitals in Gaza completely out of service. Spokesman also quoted remarks by the UN Special Rapporteur on occupied Palestinian territories that the crimes committed by Israel in Gaza during the past 6 months could keep the International Criminal Court busy for the next 50 years. Ireland's foreign minister says Dublin will intervene in South Africa's case for genocide against Israel at the International Court of Justice. Michael Martin said what is currently happening in Gaza constitutes blatant violation of international humanitarian law on a massive scale. He said Israel is purposefully withholding aid delivery to Gaza and targeting civilians and territories' infrastructure. He noted the regime indiscriminately uses explosives in populated areas and uses civilian objects for military purposes. Martin says such measures amount to collective punishment of an entire population, adding that this has to stop. In January, the World Court ordered Israel to refrain from any acts that could fall under the Genocide Convention and ensure that its troops do not commit genocidal acts against the Palestinians. Canada-based rights activist Firas al-Najim says that while the Israeli regime is losing its allies, support for Palestine is growing worldwide.
I think that Israel is losing their allies and they're losing lots of support, and also that the freedom seekers and the people that want freedom for Palestine are actually growing. You can see that they're growing in universities, in high schools, in elementary schools, even at a young age of kids, that they're also getting more awareness and active in their schools. There's protests happening in elementary schools. So when you see something like that, you see it's very significant. And then we can see that, even in companies and, in the medical field, like hospitals, doctors, they're all speaking out against all these crimes, and they're making stands. And some of them are actually sacrificing their jobs. They're sacrificing their livelihood. They're sacrificing their incomes. And they're willing to do that because they feel that this is a conscious and humanitarian cause that they should stand up for. And it's truly human rights that you're standing up for when you stand up for Palestine, because Palestinians are the most, abused people from the Zionist regime and the criminals.
New footage emerges showing a disturbing incident in which Israeli forces execute 2 unarmed Palestinians heading to northern Gaza. Now, footage captured by long-distance cameras shows a man walking along Al-Rashid Street and Al-Nablusi roundabout west of Gaza City. Both men are waving white flags of surrender. Israeli soldiers give them a false sense of safety before fatally gunning them down. Footage also shows regime soldiers trying to bury them with sand and garbage using a bulldozer. The Hamas resistance movement has reacted to the incident, saying is further evidence that fascism and criminality that governs Zionist regime's behavior. Hamas called on the UN and international courts to hold the regime and its terrorist criminal leaders accountable for their crimes against the children and unarmed civilians of Gaza. And Russia says it is extremely hard to believe that the Daesh terrorist group has the capacity to launch last week's deadly shooting attack on a concert hall in Moscow. Russia's foreign ministry spokeswoman said the West rushed to pin responsibility on Daesh to deflect blame from Ukraine and its Western allies. Maria Zakharova said the U.S. is covering up for Ukraine, adding that Washington's bias and involvement in this issue is evident. Now, her comments came after the Russian Federal Security Service suggested not only Ukraine, but also the U.S. and U.K. may have been behind this act of terror. Russian President Vladimir Putin also said the terrorists behind the attack were caught while fleeing towards Ukraine. The U.S., U.K., and Ukraine have all denied involvement in the shooting, which left more than 140 people dead. The Islamic Republic of Iran has distributed a large amount of humanitarian aid among Palestinian refugees in Syria throughout the holy month of Ramadan as part of its unwavering support for the Palestinian cause. Ibrahim Wahdi reports from Damascus.
In the holy month of Ramadan, and as part of its commitment to Al-Quds International Day, the Islamic Republic of Iran, via its embassy in Damascus, has distributed several tons of humanitarian aid among Palestinian refugees and resistance factions in Syria. The convoy included essential food kits as a gift from the Iranian nation.
The Islamic Republic of Iran and the Axis of Resistance stand by the oppressed Palestinian people in the face of the Western and American support for the Israeli entity, which has not ceased its crimes against the Palestinian people in Gaza. Today's gathering comes within the framework of supporting the resilient and patient Palestinian people.
This gift is part of a series of annual donations offered by the Islamic Republic of Iran to Palestinian refugees during the month of Ramadan in several Syrian cities. According to Palestinian officials, this large amount of aid delivered by Iran is a message of solidarity with and commitment to the Palestinian cause.
This is a significant step within the framework of Iran's support for the resistance of the Palestinian people. This support has been reflected in all forms and means since the victory of the Islamic Revolution under the leadership of Imam Khomeini, may God rest his soul, and whose legacy continued with the leader Imam Ali Khamenei. Therefore, we as Palestinian people and resistance factions appreciate this gift and everything that the Islamic Republic is providing.
The Palestinian factions expressed their gratitude to the Islamic Republic of Iran for this gift that is presented every year to the Palestinian people.
This aid provided by the Islamic Republic of Iran during the month of Ramadan to the Palestinian people is considered as proof of Iran's great role and the interdependence between the Iranian and Palestinian people. These activities confirm the loyalty of the Palestinian people to the Axis of Resistance, in addition to the fundamental and strategic role of Syria and Iran in the Axis of Resistance.
With this humanitarian aid, Iran demonstrates that true support lies in actions rather than words, and it reflects the enduring place of the Palestinian cause in every Iranian's heart.
This gift is not only a gesture of love from the Iranian leadership and people. More importantly, it underscores their unwavering commitment to help their Palestinian brethren wherever they are. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
As Israel presses ahead with brutal onslaught on Gaza, UN rights rapporteurs are becoming increasingly critical of the regime's genocidal war. They're not calling for Israel to be held accountable for its many crimes. We discussed this issue earlier in our news review program. Here it is. The United Nations Special Rapporteur on Occupied Palestinian Territory argues that Israel cannot behave as an apartheid state and face no consequences.
I'm part of a movement which wants the end of the apartheid, which wants that Israel behaves and lives in accordance with international law. Israel cannot behave as it does as an apartheid state and face no consequences.
Francesca Albanese also says Israel has destroyed Gaza by relentless attack since the beginning of its war early October. She added Tel Aviv's actions could be interpreted only as intention to systematically destroy Palestinians as a group. Albanese pointed out the Zionist regime's stated goal was to destroy Hamas, but its actions have led to a large number of civilian casualties. And she urged the world to confront regime's brutality and make it adhere to international law. Albanese also mentioned that she received threats during her work on reporting human rights violations in Gaza. She's published a report on Israel committing genocide in the besieged enclave. Joining us now for the program is Fra Hughes, journalist, author, and activist, joining us out of Belfast, and Tony Gosling, historian and investigative journalist, joining us from Bristol. Gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you both to the program. Tony, this is Francesca Albanese, UN Special Rapporteur. She also said the Zionist regime's stated goal was to destroy Hamas, but its actions have led to a large number of civilian casualties, saying that these actions can only be interpreted as systematically they're out to destroy Palestinians as a group. Now, my question to you, if the stated reason was really just to go objective, was to go in there after Hamas, then why do you have cabinet members either promoting it explicitly about taking over Gaza and setting up luxury condos on the beachfront there, and if they're not saying it, they're at least very quietly condoning it, because there are so many settlers making using this kind of rhetoric, and they're not saying anything to oppose it. So basically, you have this this government right now in Tel Aviv that is leading its public, at least its settlers and many of these extreme Zionists, to think that, hey, the end game here is not Hamas, but to take Gaza and push Palestinians out.
Well, yes, it definitely is. The end game is a massive land grab, as has been going on ever since 1948, in bits and dribs and drabs. But of course, those people are in the way, and they are they're being killed in this process. Look, to answer your question, the Jewish London comedian Alexei Sale put it very well over the Christmas break. He said they lie and they lie and they lie and they lie and they lie, and he carried on for over a minute saying the same thing, which I won't do now, but I think you get the idea. They are trying to use the credulity of the press in order to just simply lie their way out of this one, because they're not interested in getting Hamas. What they're really interested in doing is killing all of the Palestinians, because by their logic, and I think many of us were pointing this out right at the very start, if you're trying to bomb Hamas from the air in civilian areas, the only way you can kill Hamas completely and destroy it is by killing all of the Palestinians. And nobody really seems to be, well, very few people seem to be pointing this out, that actually this is a recipe for genocide. They know that. And when it comes to actual genuine negotiations, the Israelis are saying that they demand the release of the hostages, which were taken by Hamas, in order to have a ceasefire. Well, that means that they're telling Hamas they've got to give up their main negotiating chip before there will be a ceasefire. Now, anybody with a brain cell knows that if you're going to have an end to warfare, you have a ceasefire first, and then you negotiate. So you stop the killing, stop the shooting, and then both sides can negotiate. And that's not, we're not even seeing on the table the release of all of the Palestinian hostages and prisoners by the Israelis on the table. But many of the Western commentators just don't point that out. So the fact of the matter is, we're dealing with a nuclear-armed, I would call, doomsday cult here, because they seem to be trying to drag the Americans and everybody else, even potentially the Iranians, the Russians, the Chinese, into a conflict in the Middle East, which could turn global. And that's why I think the efforts of the United Nations are so important, and also why I would applaud, actually, many of the neighbouring Arab states, despite the temptation to actually take a punch at the Israelis for what they're doing. They're being very restrained about it. They realise that the Israelis are trying to set up a trap here in order to increase it for a wider war. And it all seems to be around the idea of keeping Netanyahu out of jail. Even many of the the Israeli people are coming out still demonstrating against this guy Netanyahu, who should be in prison for fraud. And he seems to be playing an enormous diversion in order to try and keep himself in power. So, you know, in a nutshell, I think that's ultimately what's going on. But it's very difficult to see how this gets resolved without some sort of resolution at the UN Security Council and some kind of armed intervention against the Israelis.
And I'm glad you mentioned that, Tony, because that was going to be my last and final question that I'm going to put to Fra. That this young lady also mentions that the world needs to work together to put an end and confront the regime's brutality and make it adhere to international law, something we haven't been able to do for so... I mean, we should have been able to do this yesterday, and by yesterday, I mean the last 75 years, Fra. So today would not be in front of us the way it is, as despicably as it is, and grotesquely as it is. So my question to you, how do you do that? Because when you have the U.S., which itself feels like it's above the law, and it's always there to protect the Israeli regime, and even now when they criticize the regime, I don't know if it's for theatrics or if it's genuine, they laugh off Washington's criticism. They laugh off the Europeans. They Tony says we need some real concrete stuff at the U.N. They've been laughing at the U.N. For a decade. So how do you get the regime to play by the rules and respect international law?
Well, I think the fact that the Americans sent their aircraft carriers on the second day after the 7th of October tells you everything you need to know about American hegemony within the region. They were there to prevent Iran, Hezbollah, the Syrian regime, and those in Iraq and Yemen from potentially trying to prevent the genocide against the people of Gaza. So while America backs Israel, Israel will be held unaccountable. I think there's an old Egyptian saying where someone asked the Pharaoh, how did you become a monster? And he replied, no one stopped me. And that is the quintessential kind of a thought process that people should indulge in when it comes to watching the genocide in Gaza.
Gentlemen, thank you both for joining us on the program.
Can I just say
go
something
ahead.
Quickly?
Yeah, sure, go ahead, Tony.
Yeah, just because it's Ramadan coinciding with Easter and Passover this year, which it doesn't always do, and I think we need to actually give some prayers. And also, let's test the Israelis. Do they really believe in God or not this Passover? I think we will see that by their actions.
Good stuff, gentlemen. Stay safe. Thank you. It's always a pleasure to actually, you're two of my favorite people to have on our interviews. Stay safe. Both of you, Fra Hughes, they're joining us out of Belfast, and Tony Gosling joining us from Bristol. And this brings us to this segment, end of this segment, I should say, of your news review program. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
Alongside Iranians in Nowruz. In the name of God, salam everybody, welcome to the program. Today is the 8th day of Nowruz holidays. Congratulations on this ancient Iranian feast. As we had promised you, today we will go to Shiraz to make you familiar with the customs of Nowruz of the people in this beautiful and globally famous city. Stay with us, please. Shiraz is one of the most beautiful cities in Iran. This city is the destination of trip for many travelers in Nowruz, as the weather is good and everywhere one can feel the arrival of a spring. Shiraz is home to a variety of ethnicities, mainly Fars, Azeri, Lor, and Arab. Each of these ethnicities have certain customs and culture contributing to prosperity of the culture of Shiraz as a whole. Natives of Shiraz speak Farsi with a Shirazi dialect. Most of the people in the city are Shia Muslims, while small minorities of Jews and Christians have also lived there since old times. Shiraz is renowned all over the world as the land of poem, culture, garden, flower, and nightingale. Sa'di and Hafez are the two poets of Shiraz who have gained international fame for decades. They are the honor of Shiraz and Iran, and their poems have been translated to scores of languages. Traveling to Shiraz in spring is accompanied with the fragrance of bitter orange, that is citrus aurantium blossoms. The people of Fars province, especially the provincial capital of Shiraz, welcome the arrival of spring a few weeks before. They clean their houses, buy new clothes or fabric to sew new clothes. People of Shiraz usually pay a visit to the shrine of Shah Cheragh, a descendant of the Prophet's seventh infallible successor, Imam Musa Kazem, peace upon him. They have other customs like preparing ash, a special kind of broth, and fale hafiz, which means fortune-telling with the divan of hafiz. In other words, they open a page of Hafez book of poetry randomly and read the poem. They believe that the implication of that poem will be the fate of the person in the coming year. Going to fish pond is another custom which used to be held in three cities of Shiraz, Fasa, and Zargan, but as the pond in Fasa has dried up, there are only two ponds for the custom. 10 meters below the tomb of Sa'di, there is a qanat, with compounds of phosphorus and quicksilver. Qanat, or qanat, is an underground aqueduct which transfers water to the surface. It flows into a pond called Hoze Mahi, fish pond, underground. The pond is on the left of the tomb. The interior is octagonal and reaches the yard of the tomb with 28 steps. Before the time of Sa'di and even in ancient Iran, there was water here and the water was sanctified. According to the 14th century Muslim traveler Ibn Battuta, the pond was constructed by Sa'di. Today, people of Shiraz go to the pond, which is full of red fish, and cast coins in it with the hope of achieving their aspirations. But the people of Zargan gather around the pond and put a big pot on fire to make ash. People of Shiraz start exchanging of visits from the morning of the first day of spring. There are no exception to other ethnicities in going to visit the elderly first. Some elderlies give the young ones a plate containing roasted wheat, sesame, roasted chickpeas and raisin. Another plate is also given with a sweet bread and painted egg. In the past, singers used to go from door to door in the morning of Nowruz to visit the needy and congratulate them. They would tell them sweet stories to make them happy, and both would pray for each other. Another custom among the people of Shiraz is the symbolic wedding of bitter orange. Bitter orange is one of the most beautiful trees in Iran. It is found everywhere in Shiraz. The sweet fragrance of the blossoms of this tree remain indelibly in the minds of every visitor and tourist as a memory of Shiraz. Any house with a bitter orange tree holds a wedding ceremony for the tree, no matter if the tree yields fruit or not. The wedding of bitter orange tree stems from the story of a woman who wanted to cut down the tree as it was not fruitful in a certain year. In this custom, neighborly women are invited and the landlady takes a saw to cut a twig of the tree that has become unkind. One of the women plays the role of a go-between to prevent her. Then they spread a thin lace over the tree, sprinkle special sweets over the tree while singing and enjoying themselves. Thus, the tree is made bright and they believe that it will yield fruit next spring. In the final part of this episode, we are going to name some of the foods common in Shiraz during Nowruz. Some of the foods of Shiraz in Nowruz are shekarpolo, sweet rice, ash sabzi, vegetables broth, tar halva, a kind of halva, and ash karde. These foods are palatable for visitors and tourists. Other traditional foods of Shiraz during Nowruz include ash anar, pomegranate broth, qorme beh, a kind of a stew with chopped quince, dopiaze, made with onion, potato and curry, yakhni nokhod, a kind of delicious broth, yakhni adas kalam, broth with lentil and cabbage, kufte holu, made with meat, onion, saffron, sugar, plum, walnut, etc. The naming of this food is because of resemblance of the balls after preparation. The Shirazi cuisine includes other foods too, but what is famous not just in Iran but in most countries is Salad Shirazi. Its primary ingredients are cucumber, tomato, and onion. Then it is served with lime juice, olive oil, spices, and so on, based on the taste of individuals. It is somewhat similar to pico del gallo and Mediterranean salad. The last but not least, mention should be made of falude Shirazi, which is very tasty and enlivening. It is made with starch, half-frozen syrup of lime, sugar, and rose water. Then it is usually served with black cherry juice. It creates an unforgettable memory for every tourist and traveler.
Welcome to Israel Watch. On this episode, we will go over Netanyahu's criticism of the West's position after the German Chancellor's visit to Tel Aviv and the refusal of the tribes in Gaza to the United Nations request to distribute aid. We'll also touch upon the internal Zionist disputes. Regarding these topics, I welcome Professor Hadi Kobayesi, Director of the Al-Ittihad Research and Development Center. My warm welcome, dear Professor. The United States is more enthusiastic about the truce and the captives exchange deal because it will also withdraw on the Yemeni front, which is what Biden needs in the heat of the presidential elections he is running. Professor Hadi Kobayesi, what do you think of the articles of the negotiations in Doha, Qatar, and what the Hebrew media mentioned about the American goals of this truce and the exchange deal? That is, calm on the Gaza and Yemen fronts, as Biden needs it in the upcoming presidential elections.
We prefer to deal with American and Israeli statements with great caution, based on the experience of the past 5 months. It is clear that there is great manipulation in the distribution of roles, and there are varying and contradictory statements from official spokesmen and media professionals. I mean, a few days ago, there was talk about the Security Council session. The American presented a paper for an immediate and permanent ceasefire. The session took place a few days ago. What happened to the discussion? The discussion was limited only to Yemen and the condemnation of what Yemen is doing. Yesterday, there was a call between Biden and Netanyahu. Netanyahu said that in the call, I talked about the continuation of the war, entering Rafah, achieving goals, and eliminating Hamas. There was no American statement explaining what happened in this call. Yes, we have a distribution of roles between two parties, and we must be careful in evaluating each movement. We are approaching the elections in the U.S., and therefore the Americans need an image, calm, but at the same time, the American image must have two components, an Israeli victory and an image of some peace, normalization, humanitarian aid, and truce. Biden cannot have the absence of unity in these two forms because he needs AIPAC, he needs the support of the Israeli lobby, and he needs the votes of Muslims. And he's trying to get this needle out of this haystack. He's trying to support the Israelis to an extent, and at the same time, humanitarian aids. If we notice this last month, for example, under the roof of this slogan, under the policy that the U.S. follows, with all the aid that intervened, Israel committed massacres, about 50 massacres, and the Americans didn't talk about it. Biden did not comment. He did not comment. I mean, he sends aid by air or by sea while there are daily massacres, but he does not have a permit, and therefore there is such a coordination between him and the Israelis. It means he sends aid, but the Israelis prevent them. Biden would say, I did what I had to do for my American voters, but I did not do anything that would embarrass the Israelis in front of the Jewish voters or in front of the Israeli lobby.
Let us turn to Smotrich, who strongly opposes any captives exchange deal with Hamas and sees this as a threat to the captives. The attack on Rafah will be scheduled after knowing the outcome of the negotiations in Doha, and as soon as the occupation army begins transporting the displaced Palestinians from there, the enemy will begin the opposite of this attack. Professor Hadi Kobayesi, Israel links the attack on Rafah to the fate of the Doha negotiations and Smotrich's position of basically refusing to negotiate with Hamas.
Smotrich and Ben-Gvir do not have a change in position or a political process in thinking. One position from the first road to the last road, regardless of the results, the effects, the repercussions of relations with the Americans, and the situation on the ground.
Even Ben-Gvir called for the assassination of Ismail Haniyeh instead of going to the Doha negotiations.
The movement is disconnected from political reality. It has goals that it sets, and by following them, it comes to the results and the possibility of achieving the goals, their outcomes, and their repercussions. What about Rafah? But this movement is being used by Netanyahu to say that I have a movement that I don't know what I want to do with it.
and I have to sponsor it in front of the Americans, in front of the liberals, Gantz and others, and also in front of the Palestinian negotiator, because they use this scarecrow. As for Rafah, we will see the negotiations, and I believe that according to the scenario I mentioned at the beginning, the war is continuing. And when Biden spoke, when he attacked Netanyahu with the same speech, he said two things. We will not stop the weapons, and we will not stop the war. We will not stop supplying weapons to Israel, and we will not accept stopping the war. These are frank words from him. I think this scenario is the one that works.
Let us move on to the visit of the German Chancellor to Tel Aviv, which was less sympathetic to the regime than his first visits, as he affirmed his rejection of military action in Rafah, which would lead to the starvation of the people of Gaza. After the visit of the German Chancellor and his stances, Netanyahu began to harshly criticize Western leaders because of their positions that are against starving the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip.
Netanyahu's statements were the subject of interaction on Israeli social media sites, and these are some of the comments.
Nedav Monk.
That is, they all say that security is stable.
Uri.
Netanyahu has been removed from our lives. You have destroyed everything. There is no security in the streets.
Ina.
The people here are also pushing for elections. The polls speak for themselves.
Dana.
Is there anything that Netanyahu did not succeed in destroying? Now also the relations with the United States? Enough has exhausted us. Leave.
Ilana.
You continue the war and do not return the kidnapped people in order to remain in power.
Fernanda.
They all want you to leave. Enough. You have destroyed Israel. You have brought the greatest disaster on it. Leave.
So, Professor Hadi Kubaisi, how do you explain this sharp criticism by Netanyahu of Western leaders after the positions of the German chancellor, which were less sympathetic to the regime than his first visit, as the Hebrew media noted?
In the West, it works on several layers and several levels. One of the levels of work and courses of action is to prepare and invest in the results of the war. It comes as a savior, as an assistant, as a mediator, as a manager of a peace process and a negotiation process, and to avoid all the negative effects of the war that have been a repercussion. Demonstrations in the West, security crises, expected future crises, political differences even within parties. The West, for example, France and Germany, is one of these players who was initially supportive and sent arms to Israel. They all arm Israel from behind the curtains. But on the surface, they say, we hear the people of Gaza starving, we're helping them. So that the Palestinians took to the West as a party that has credibility and legitimacy and has pure, good, positive and humanitarian intentions, and therefore preferable to Gaza. This is according to Western thought. They say that the Palestinians sees that we come to Gaza, carry out a peace process, carry out a security movement, communicate with the tribes, communicate with the notables, and carry out political and field intervention within the Gaza Strip, so that we can achieve the goals of the war that Israel started, which is to change and modify the social and political situation inside the Gaza Strip. This path is progressing, even if the war will not end, but they have begun to prepare the image, language, discourse, positioning, and behavior to play this role inside Palestine.
In short, why does Netanyahu criticize them in this way?
It was a response to the American talk of the elections. The Americans have a collection of interests. It has a personal conflict, meaning there are personal interests between Netanyahu and Biden. Biden wants to go to the second term of presidency, and Netanyahu wants to remain in power. The problem is personal. Under the general policies of the two countries, the course of the war was underway and the whole world was happy. The basis is that we achieve the goals, eliminate the extremists, go to peace, and establish normalization. The Americans emerge as a peacemaker and thus left the Jews and Muslims and their reconciliation among themselves, and he wins at home. What happened is the delay in achieving the goals, and it has become a problem. Achieving the goals has not yet happened, and the time is running out because the American elections are getting close, and thus the Americans are taking action. They want to hold Israel, which has failed to achieve the goals, including Netanyahu. Netanyahu is the one who bears responsibility for the lack of electoral votes for Biden, and Biden holds him responsible.
Let us remain with the United States, as it's in a desperate situation. No one gives it any weight, not in the regime, not even in Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran. One of the most important achievements of Commander Yahya Sinwar is that he succeeded in creating a rift between the Israeli regime and the United States. Professor Hadi Kubayesi, what do you think of the words of this Zionist analyst who describes leader Sinwar as a wonder who succeeded in creating a rift between the regime and the U.S., which seemed to be in a situation where no one gave it any weight, according to Af Aitiam, the former Zionist minister?
Of course, there is a little bit of exaggeration in his words, or a provocation for the Americans, who changed the way they deal with the Israelis. He even goes beyond the electoral issue and deals with it as an issue for the regime. I mean, if it was an issue related to the regime of Israel only, I believe that they would not have any problem. If Biden only takes into account the American strategic political considerations and its interests in the region, he will clearly go with them in the war. But as a result of the elections issue, they're demanding the U.S. go beyond the elections and treat them as a state. One of Netanyahu's main advisors is the one who incited him to carry out the ground operation and continue the war. And his words are clear. He portrays the Americans, as well as Abramovich, as people who are against Israel and are putting pressure on Israel and are silent about it, while the other parties are waging a war against Yemen. They're waging a war as well, and they have carried out strikes in Iraq and Syria and are arming the Israelis day and night. But they, the Israelis, are saying, "You are our enemies. You're fighting us in time. We must be friends." This is Jewish talk. Jewish grievance is their adopted method, exaggerating grievances in an illogical and unrealistic way.
I mean, Professor Kubayesi, Mohammed Dahlan's plan is clear as if it is an Israeli-American plan par excellence. What is the purpose of publishing such plans at this time in the Hebrew media? And basically, do you think they are correct?
It may be realistic, but it is a dreamy initiative. I mean, if the war goals raised by Netanyahu were achieved in the event of eliminating Hamas, there would be a possibility. But we should refer to the analyses, and not only the analyses. What does the annual threats report of the American Intelligence Council say? It says that in the coming years, the Israeli forces will try and struggle to dismantle Hamas in the Gaza Strip. And Hamas has proved that it will rebuild its strength and pose a threat to the Israelis outside the Gaza Strip during the next 5 or 6 years. We're completely far from this proposal, meaning the reality on the ground. I cite the American statement, or the official American analysis, which is an official document of the state, to say that they also acknowledge and admit to the media that they want to deal with this reality. But the reality on the ground indicates, and the events inside the Gaza Strip show, that this issue is very unrealistic.
Professor Hadi Kubayesi, what is your explanation for this insistence by the United Nations and the West on giving a role to the tribes in the issue of aid distribution without coordination with the Hamas movement?
They are establishing the political alternative. The land, society, and social infrastructure become separated from Hamas, and therefore Hamas has no role. Little by little, this land is demanding the authority of the technocrats, and we will reach it little by little, gradually. This is part of the course of the years that they are talking about, and in fact, Gantz talked about it at the beginning of the war or the first month. He said, "We need 10 years. This is a path that requires cultural, social, and security adjustment, and an adjustment in the balance of power at the level of the social structure."
The tribes rejected this proposal.
Here, his explanation for the tribes' refusal is that they are afraid that Hamas will not be eliminated, and thus Hamas will rebound and react to it. But the reality is that these tribes are Hamas, and there is no difference between them.
Director of the Al-Ittihad Research and Development Center, Hadi Kubayesi, thank you very much, and thank you for your good follow-up. Greetings until we meet again. God bless you.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, Allah desires ease for us in the holy month of Ramadan and our Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. It's an honor to be here, dear friends. We are talking about how Allah the Almighty desires ease for us in the holy month of Ramadan and in our Islamic lifestyle. Now, these kind of pointers are really important because if we don't have the right perception, if we don't have the right view, if we don't have the right understanding of the holy month of Ramadan, then what happens is that we're not able to benefit from the holy month of Ramadan because, you know, we're kind of turned off and we don't really understand the benefits, let alone try to acquire the benefits. So one of the most fundamental things, you know, that an individual needs to do is to understand the essence of the holy month of Ramadan. And, you know, of course, we can never fully understand the, you know, complete universal and cosmic depths of the holy month of Ramadan because it is so vast. But at least on a superficial level, there are very profound things about the holy month of Ramadan, you know, that we can try to understand. For example, the fact that it is a month in which we are easily able to connect with our Creator, the Almighty Allah. That in itself is such a huge thing if you start to think about it, you know. And a lot of times, the lifestyle that we live and this Western-oriented lifestyle that's been kind of forced down the throats of the people of the world is a lifestyle which prevents you from thinking. It doesn't allow you to think or contemplate. It doesn't allow you to reflect upon your life, upon your, you know, goal in living. It doesn't let you think about your future or your past or, you know, your deeds or your relationship with God. You know, it is a culture that it primarily just keeps you busy so that you're constantly in this rat race making money for somebody else.
رمضان المستبين جاء بالنور المبين رمضان 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 القانتين.
Welcome back. This is A to Z on IRIB English Radio. So, dear friends, we are talking about how Allah desires ease for us in this holy month of Ramadan. You know, we had talked about in the previous segment how if we don't have the correct perception or the correct understanding of the holy month of Ramadan, then it's going to make it difficult for us to really take advantage of this holy month. And, you know, we said that thinking is something that is good. Contemplating, reflecting is something that is good and something that is highly encouraged in Islam, and it is highly discouraged in the Western culture and in Western discourse. So in the Holy Quran, Allah Himself says in Surah Al-Baqarah, verse number 185 of chapter number 2, He says that Allah desires ease for you and He does not desire for you difficulty. And this is in respects to the holy month of Ramadan. So Allah wants ease for us, you know. If you're sick, for example, if you're traveling, if you are expecting a baby, even if you're suckling an infant, these are all situations in which an individual does not need to fast, right? So people that are not in this category, or for example, if, you know, small children as well, they kind of fall under those who are sick, or they fall under the category of those who are just not able to fast. They don't have the strength to do so, right? So when you take everybody else in, they're all strong, healthy, sane people. And so it is relatively easy for these people to fast. And
you know, we've run out of time, but if we keep this in mind that Allah wants ease for us, He does not want difficulty, He does not want to put us in a difficult position. If He puts us in a test or a trial, it's because Allah knows that we have the potential to be able to succeed. When we start to think like this, then it really impacts our holy month of Ramadan, and of course it impacts and has an effect on our Islamic lifestyle. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of A to Z. Don't forget to visit our website at parsetoday.ir/EN Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
You lift me up high, you spread my wings and fly me to the sky. I so alive, it's like my soul thrives in your light. But how I wish you'd be here with me all year around. Ramadan, 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 we are happy.
Hi, I am Javad Qarai, an Iran trotter.
I think Iran is a unique country, and I'm supposed to award you with the beauties of my beloved country and my trips to the most pristine places in Iran, a country I wholeheartedly feel proud of. Many people in the world consider Iran as a desert country because it's located on the dry belt of the earth. They don't have the right image of the beloved Iran. Undoubtedly, a major part of Iran consists of vast and, of course, impressively beautiful deserts, but the fact is about 55% of Iran consists of mountains, and we can see that Iran is a mountainous country where the Alborz and Zagros are the most remarkable mountain ranges in the unique country. Alborz mountain range is very crucial as it houses the gorgeous Mount Damavand and the 40 million year old Hyrcanian forests in the north. And the Zagros mountain range stands out in western Iran due to its dense oak forests as well as numerous rivers and waterfalls. This time, I've traveled to a part of the Zagros mountain range in Delfan in Lorestan province, a region that enjoys ancient culture and art besides its unique nature and is home to passionate people who speak in Lakh. Oh, what a place. It's like a blade and has a low altitude. But I never take a risk. If I want to walk in the mountain and reach a point, I'll try to choose the easiest path, not the fastest or shortest one. Because when you're traveling in nature or climbing a mountain, the easiest way will save your life, but short paths can be dangerous. I'm sure I can pass through this path, although it is steep and there are thin layers of stone. Those places are a little risky, but I know that I can. When I'm not sure if I can pass or not, there's no way I'll take the risk and take that path. This place is good. The stones stick together like thin layers, and they've created a very beautiful shape. But at the same time, it involves a great deal of risk. Look how beautiful it is, and of course, dangerous. I have to be careful I don't slip. Oh, look at the other side. It's an abyss. But I trespass this tree's territory. I'll pass by it without causing any damage to it.